Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta. John Waters has been called all kinds of names throughout his career. Pope of Trash, Prince of Puke. That's because John is famous and infamous for his transgressive cult films. Movies like Multiple Maniacs, Pink Flamingos, and Female Trouble. But Waters is also an artist. The Baltimore Museum of Art is hosting a major retrospective for their local boy who's made good or bad or both. It's called Indecent Exposure and features John's art, including photographs, sculptures, and videos that he's made since the early 1990s. A word of warning, some of our conversation contains mature material. So, John, you took photographs with real film, and you took these photos of images on the television?
Yeah, without stopping it or freeze-framing it or anything, yes, in the beginning. They weren't digital. Digital doesn't work. I still have tried it off the TV screen with digital. It doesn't work right.
Why not?
It just doesn't look right to me. It doesn't have that amateur kind of feel. It doesn't look like an early underground movie. It doesn't look like somebody snuck in and made a piece of art in the middle of the night in a closed theater where they put the print on themselves without asking or hijacked the projectionist or something.
Yeah, that element of subterfuge is missing.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, you're basically putting together storyboards that tell a new narrative, or else you're composing a new movie from sometimes your images, from other directors' images.
Yeah, completely. It's like a snipe hunt. I think up the narrative of each piece before I ever do them. So I guess you could call it the dreaded conceptual art. And then I have to find the images for each thing to be able to tell the story. Sometimes it doesn't work, and I take those images and keep them. I have many, many little envelopes of different subject matters or backgrounds or everything. And then I write with them and I edit with them, with those pictures, to tell a new story. So something I took that didn't work might end up, you know, 10 years later in another sequence that I'm using to tell another story.
Can you describe an example of one of your favorite My Little Movies works that we can see in your new exhibition?
There's a movie where Elizabeth Taylor gets a facelift in it, and her stitches kind of look like my mustache, I noticed. So I edit it back and forth, like, so it's Elizabeth Taylor, me, and then I turn into her and get a facelift with, and she has my mustache. So it's kind of morphing other images into a completely different narrative than there was in the original movie.
And do you have a title for that one?
That one is called Facelift, I think.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
And then I have another one, Santa Molester, and it's from a really innocent child's movie. Uh-huh. But the way I photographed it, Santa's looking in the window and the kid's in there and everything. And then when the Santa comes in, the kid falls to his knees and runs over and hugs Santa. But just the way I edited it makes the most innocent children's movie look completely, almost pornographic in a completely innocent way. You don't see one thing. It's a G-rated movie.
I'm curious about why you felt compelled to start creating fine art. Was part of the motivation the fact that when you do that, you're in total control, whereas when you're making a film, you're working with all these other people, it's so collaborative?
A little. I mean, anti-fine art. Yes, it's very different. When you watch a movie or you see artwork, or you see a movie and you watch, yeah, you more you watch a movie and see an art piece. But I was trying to tell a story in a much quicker way. Talk about the high concept. You know, it's like two frames.
Yeah.
That's it. But it's also something that you're going to look at forever if you have it hanging in your house. So it's very different from even a cult movie. People might have seen it 10 times. They don't look at it every single day of their life when they look up from their bed or something. So I tried to imagine that too. Pieces that wouldn't always be something that people would want to hang over their sofa. Because my collectors, they understand that I'm satirizing the whole art business in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between the kinds of reactions you're trying to get from the people who watch your films versus the people who experience your fine art?
Completely. I never mix them at all. Even where I think up my photographs is a whole different place than where I write my movies or shows or books.
Well, so what's the difference?
It's different because the art world, the only obscenity left is celebrity. And I hate celebrity artists, too. So basically, I try to debase that and ruin my celebrity. But at the same time, I've never given an article in, like, say, People magazine or something where I routinely do, you know, press for the movies. about my art career, really. I like to keep them very, very separate. Many people that are fans of my movies probably don't even know I have that, even though there are 4 art books out about my work. I guess it gets less and less like that. But still, I like to keep it separate because I think it is a very separate thing. I think it up in a whole different place. I still collect art. I still go to art galleries all the time. And it's just as important to me, but it's different.
Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to say that you're still going after shock value, trying to surprise people?
Well, all contemporary art is made to wreck what came before. So there's always a little bit of shock value in contemporary art. And I have a piece in the show that says contemporary art hates you, because it does. And people have great fear of contemporary art. And so it can hate you and you have to love it for it, and then the hate can't hurt, and then you buy it and then you put it on your wall. I think Ileana Sutherland, one of the most famous collectors, they always asked her, how did you build this great, great collection? She said, I just bought what I hated. and I understand that in a way, because all the art that put the movement before it out of business made fun of it. And like the soup can was greeted with outrage, a minimalism. All of these things happened when they first came out. Abstract expressionism was made fun of by the public, certainly, in the beginning. And that's what you need in the beginning, is to have a controversy that says, this is it, it's gone too far.
Just the other day, I was at Target with my wife, and the soup can idea has really been domesticated, because there was the Campbell's soup can with Mickey Mouse's 90th birthday on the label.
Yeah, well, that was pop art. Certainly started with cartoon characters, really.
That's true. Good point. I want to ask you about a work that you created, I think, in 2006. It's called Faux Video Room. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. Collectors today, video art is very popular, but still not embraced by every collector, because when they're going to 20 art shows and they walk in, they think, oh, God, how long is it? I have to go in this dark room for 40 minutes and watch some arty thing. So mine is called Faux Video Room. It looks like one. You get the doorway, the curtain, you hear sound behind it, but you paint the wall black. And so there isn't really a room, but you can pretend that you collect video art, too, for other collectors when they're over, especially if you don't have the room.
Then when you go beyond the curtain, there's a wall.
You would paint the wall black.
Right.
But you'd be surprised. In every show that piece has been in, we have to repaint it 3 or 4 times. Because people, even though they see that it's a black wall, they keep trying to get in. They refuse to believe it isn't a video room.
It's like the guy who fell in that black hole recently.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, yeah. That was kind of art. Didn't he fall in an art piece? Yeah, yeah.
Well. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Made with a special paint, because he thought it wasn't a real hole, so it's sort of a Wile E. Coyote thing.
Well, contemporary art hated him.
Yeah. but getting back to Faux Video Room for a moment, there's a soundtrack that plays when you confront the wall.
There is, but it doesn't really matter what the sound is, because you just needed the muffled sound so it sounded like that there was sound behind there that would trick you to go in. It is actually the final suicide in Jonestown that was actually, I bought the album of that. There was an album called The Last Supper that was sold in the New York Times classified section. And that is what's playing in the back, but you could have any sound, really, although once you know it's that, it makes it a little more, I guess, awkward for fellow collectors.
Well, are you concerned about the ethics of incorporating audio of people committing suicide into that work, or is that part of the point of the piece?
No, I think it was, well, certainly I didn't order them to do it.
I know, but you know what I mean, just playing it, and say if some relatives.
I just came from the John Waters camp, which is this big thing we have every year at a real camp where all my fans come and they stay for the whole weekend, and the t-shirt says Jonestown with a happy ending. So that's what it was anyway. But no, I just needed something strong, a sound there, and it just happened at the time, so I had to use something. So yes, I was always going to add something that gave it a little extra edge, certainly.
In an essay that's included in the exhibition catalog, the curator Kristen Heilman says that in Faux Video Room, quote, you are equating the actions of those who follow a cult leader to their deaths with the quest for artistic novelty and enlightenment undertaken by believers indoctrinated in the rituals of museum, biennial, art fair, and gallery attendance, end quote. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, people with art, I love art writing, and I love
Me
the
too.
Stretch it goes. So basically, I wouldn't say she was wrong. Was I thinking that when I did the piece? No.
Yeah.
But I was certainly satirizing art collectors and what they could collect and what that they could put in your home, and how hard it is to display video art in your house unless you really do have a video room, which very few people do. So I think Kristen's essay is great. I think it's very intellectual. But I love that. I love even impenetrable art writing I'm a fan of.
Yeah, and that is quite penetrable. What other sound works are included in the Indecent Exposure exhibition?
There's one called Sound of a Hit that I recorded in the Senator Theater in Baltimore in the box office opening day of Harry Potter.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing today? Can I get three tickets for tomorrow's 1 o'clock showing?
Okay, tomorrow the 20th.
You know, it's the sound of selling tickets and money being exchanged for an hour, which I thought was kind of perfect for any showbiz person's office or something.
Yeah, that's great. Any other ones that come to mind?
Let me see. Any other ones that have a sound? I'm trying to remember. I know that one does. There's another piece I have that sort of mocks the insurance regulations of many museums, that where you go in, I don't know if you've ever seen, if a collector has it and it's worth so much money, the piece, they have like this kind of area that's kind of bugged in front of it. So if you get too close to it, a buzzer goes off or something for insurance reasons.
Yeah.
Well, mine squirts you in the face with water if you get too close.
Yeah, isn't it called Hardy Har?
It is. I'm pushing to see can art be serious and funny.
Yeah.
And it always reminds me of Candid Camera when people get squirted in the face in a museum. They scream. They jump back.
It seems to me that one of the differences between your film career and your fine art career is that a lot of your fine art is making fun of the contemporary art world, while your films are not so much making fun of the film genre, but then...
Oh, I think they each one makes fun of a film genre.
Yeah. Having said that, I now realize I could be entirely wrong about this, so
I mean, each one. Think of it about... Hairspray was a dance movie. Crybaby was a musical. Serial Mom was a true crime thing. A Dirty Shame was sexploitation. I think each one took a genre. I think when you say I'm making fun of it, I only make fun of things I love in this show and in all my work, really. I'm never a harsh. The only time I ever say negative stuff about something is if everyone else but me loves it.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorites of your digs at contemporary art world is your series of study art signs. Can you tell me about them?
Well, they were all based. There was a real art school in Baltimore that I saw the sign for years, and it said study art for fun or profit. I think of both the two most artistically incorrect things you would ever say in the serious art world while you studied art.
Yeah.
So I tried to use that, but it was done with no irony. I believe the school probably was for people that wanted to be kind of Sunday painters or maybe get in the business of illustration or something. So they had no interest in going into the contemporary art world that I follow. That to them, they probably would have no interest and think it was just really bad. So I just was fascinated by it, and I looked at it every day. So I did the sign, and with five different slogans, prestige or spite or other things, bounty, and things that you would also never say in the art world.
Yeah, I love that one. Study art for prestige or spite. That's my favorite.
Well,
it's great.
That's more, I think some of the art world would admit to that.
Oh, yeah, that's what, it's funny because it's true. And then there's study art for breeding or bounty, study art for pride or power, study art for fun or fame. What's the fifth one? Do you remember?
No, not offhand, but there's five of them, yeah.
The way you satirize the contemporary art scene in your work, I can't help but think of Otessa Moshfegh and her new novel, My Year of Rest and Relaxation.
Which I loved, and I loved her first novel, Eileen, really a lot, too. She's a great, great writer, yeah.
You wrote a review of her short story collection for the New York Times, I think.
Well, I think I mentioned how much I liked it. Yeah, she's great. She's really one of the best writers. Her and Rachel Cusk are my two favorites.
Yeah, I've got to read Rachel Cusk. There was that great line in your review of Homesick for Another World where you said, quote, Homesick for Another World will scorch you like a blowtorch, end quote. Is that what you want John Waters' art to do?
No, I think not, because mine, I hope you, Hardy Har Har, I hope you... You go back and want to see more contemporary art that you maybe at first would hate. And at the same time, realize that it is an elite world that is easy to parody, but at the same time, one that's a secret world that you can learn the language. And once you go to art galleries enough, you see everything in a completely different way. You walk down the street, you look at garbage. You think of an artist that does garbage. You look at a dirty car. You think of someone that paints cars. And it continues to last the more art you see. And eventually, whenever you go out, everything looks like art. Which isn't that perfect.
You also have this series of photos with captions over top, and this series is called Artistically Incorrect. Can you tell me about this series?
Right. That's like art terms that very much are insider art, like we don't do discounts. You know, most all collectors know that if you buy something and you're a good collector, they'll give you 10% off. But mine says, like, no discounts. Or the one I wanted to use the year that I had that piece in the show, I wanted to use it as the full-page ad in Artform, but even my gallery said no. It just said, all photographs fade. Because...
Yeah, and then your child probably could do this.
Well, that's a tired one where people said, my child could have done this. Well, he should have, stupid. It just sold for $1 million.
Yeah.
You should have encouraged him. I taught a class in Baltimore in a grade school. I taught a couple times a year, and we did art, and we had Cy Twombly drawings where they all blindfolded themselves and scribbled. They completely understood it. Not one of them said, this is ridiculous. They understood contemporary art perfectly.
Mm. I was surprised to read in an interview that you learned about shock value while you were being taught writing in grade school. Shock value, of course, being the idea of getting people's attention by saying something horrifying, which you're the master of. That seems to be awfully early to be learning something
like
that.
No, it was in Calvert School, and it was different ways to write. We had to always, things I really did learn there, we had to write a letter to apply for a job. We had to write a sympathy letter. We had to write a thank you letter, which I still do, and not by email. And there were different terms, you know, like alliteration. But shock value was a term that I guess I paid too much attention to. It was to suddenly say something very surprising or outrageous to get people's attention to what you're saying. And that was the name of my first book. Yeah, so I did pay attention that day in English class.
Obviously, yeah, for sure. I wish my grade school had taught shock value. Maybe they didn't. I just didn't remember it. But anyway, in an essay for your exhibition catalog, Jonathan D. Katz says that, quote, of all the autobiographical themes that pulse beneath the surface of Waters' art, the most central has to be his queerness, end quote. Would you agree with that?
Sort of, yeah, but even though I have a piece to say gay is not enough, because anymore it's not. It's a good start, but certainly I'm against separatism of any kind. I think people should come in, come out, get an operation to be a different sex and decide they don't want to go back to another one. I'm for mixing everybody together. I don't cry that gay bars are closing, because I think if I was young, I don't want to be segregated. Separate is not equal.
Yeah.
Everybody, all the cool kids want to hang around with each other. They don't care anymore. So I think that I'm against separatism, but certainly queerness in the way that you can be straight and be queer in a weird way if you don't fit in and you're bizarre and that you have very, very different tastes and a style. So yes, I would say that it has some in there that I use for humor, but I wouldn't say it's a gay art show.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite example of how your queerness plays out in your art in the exhibition?
Well, there's one. I don't know if this is in the show or not. It's called Boys Beware. I think it is. I'm not sure. And it's all pictures from sex education movies about warning kids not to hitchhike because gay men would pick them up. And the actor in it looks exactly like me.
Interesting.
Which I thought was really bizarre.
Then people are going to think, people would think, oh, it's you, like that you've
morphed. Well, no, but they could tell it's from the 50s. It just oddly does look like me. It's called Boys Beware.
John Waters, film director and contemporary artist. A major retrospective of his work, Indecent Exposure, is featured at the Baltimore Museum of Art. You can find out more about John at wpr.org/beta.
It's useful to be on the outside looking in, I think. And it certainly helps me to understand the place a little bit more, both here and back in Ireland, I think, when you have that distance.
Irish comedian Maeve Higgins joins us to talk about making a new life for herself here in America. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.